This is Voyager Revisited, a podcast on the Incomparable Network dedicated to the Star Trek Voyager series. I'm Jean McDonald, and for each episode, I invite a Star Trek fan to come and talk about Voyager. Now, on this episode, my guest is Mr. Casey Liss.
Hello.
And hello. And, you know, I mean, I think my baseline is to have somebody on the show, they have to at least be interested in Star Trek. And you mentioned that you had been a fan back in the day. So that was good, because otherwise I was going to blow you off.
But, understandable.
No, only because we'd be like, I did one episode of this with my dad, which was painful.
Oh, goodness.
He's not really that much of a Star Trek fan. But yeah, before we dig into Star Trek and Voyager stuff, why don't you tell the Voyager Revisited audience something about yourself?
Sure. So I am Casey Liss. If you know me at all, you probably know me from my podcast with my buddies Marco Arment and John Syracusa called the Accidental Tech Podcast. I have made some appearances on The Incomparable from time to time. Most recently, I've done a couple episodes of Football is Life, which is the Ted Lasso rewatch show, or not even rewatch, I should say, commentary show. But I didn't grow up with Star Trek in, I guess, the classical sense. There was a very small window of time in my relatively small window of time in my life, which was when The Next Generation was presently airing. And this was, I think it was middle school for me. I probably am wrong about that, but I feel like it was middle school. And Gene, let me tell you, I was obsessed with The Next Generation. Like, it was my whole world for a few years there.
Wow.
I adored it. I loved everything about it. I read the, I don't know if you've seen this, but there was a maroonish brown Star Trek The Next Generation technical manual, which was this paperback book that was very, very thick and relatively large. And it was like allegedly like a shop manual you would get for a car today, but it was that for the Enterprise, the 1701D. Cool. And I read that thing cover to cover like 18,000 times, because it read, at least when you're a kid anyhow, it read like it was a legitimate guide to how to, you know, make or repair or be a crew member on the Enterprise. And I loved it. And I just remember loving The Next Generation so much. I never really got into the original series. I never gave it an honest shake, or at least the TV show. Anyhow, I did love some of the original series movies. I do believe that the even numbered ones are the only ones worth anything, which is not an unpopular opinion. I adore The Wrath of Khan. The Star Trek 4 is fine. And Star Trek 6 is also really, really good. And I love those. I watched the first few of the Next Generation movies, and the ones I saw, I enjoyed. I want to say the last one I had seen, maybe it was Generations, whichever one had had Kirk in it for a while. I think that was the last one I'd watched, and I'd really enjoyed that. But after The Next Generation, I kind of just faded away from Star Trek. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't that Star Trek did anything wrong. But I just never really looked back. Like, I think I tried Deep Space Nine for a little bit and never really clicked. I think I might have maybe watched an episode or two of Voyager, maybe at the time it was airing. But if so, it was so long ago that I barely remembered it. And we'll get to this in a moment, I'm sure. But my recollection of Voyager, which may be completely erroneous, was that a ship got lost somewhere and had to fight their way back to like civilization. And that was all I remembered of Voyager before I watched this two-part episode, which you'll talk about here in a second. And I remembered that there was a woman captain named Janeway. And I think that's all I had. And so coming into this episode at the end of season two and the beginning of season three was an adventure, which we'll talk about. But I do enjoy Star Trek. Even though I don't watch it anymore, anytime I do get even in Voyager, I got that like nostalgic feeling. And there were a couple of moments in particular that I was like, oh, this is classic Trek, just absolutely classic Star Trek. And I don't know how to really verbalize it, and we'll talk about it more in a few minutes, but there's that like just feeling of, oh, this is the same sort of thing you would see in the original series. You would see this in The Next Generation. I'm sure you saw it in Deep Space Nine. You see it in Voyager. And I don't even know what series came after Voyager, to be honest
with
you.
There's so many.
I know. And I know there's one currently airing on, what is it? CBS something something, CBS All Access. Or no, it's something else now, isn't
there's
it?
There's one. There's like three.
Oh, okay, there
so,
you go.
Yeah. I mean, so what I would say is one thing about Voyager, if you're a TNG fan, Voyager is much more like TNG than Deep Space Nine is.
Okay.
Even I like Deep Space Nine, but it is like overarching, you know, it has a story arc that goes from like season 3 to season 7.
Oh, wow.
Because it is, you know, Ronald D. Moore, you know, writer of Battlestar Galactica, was, you know, very heavily involved. And it has more of that, like, what if the whole ship and the whole setup was not everything pristine, perfect, and in order, you know? Things break down, and, you know, there's areas of gray when it comes to good and bad and that kind of stuff. Deep Space Nine definitely has that. Voyager doesn't have that so much, and then it also has that, what, you know, the episodic structure. So pretty much everything you just saw in Basics 1 and 2 will not have any effect on anything going forward for the next, you know, 6 seasons or whatever.
Oh, but I can't even believe that, because first of all, there was like a whole bunch of setup that I totally missed, which I think I was able to piece together. But like, I mean, the very first note, I mean, if you're ready to dive in, if that's allowed.
Let's talk about it.
So the very first thing I wrote is, Tuvok mind melded to save some jerk? Like, and this is, I already forgot the guy's name.
It's Suter.
Suter. I'm sorry. Yes. That's correct. Apparently, he's like a big jerk, and Tuvok saved him somehow, or like helped him somehow. I don't know. Tell me what was the backstory.
You're right. There was. You're absolutely right. So a few episodes before that, and I don't remember the exact episode, but there was a kind of a murder mystery, and Tuvok, he is the security chief. And he's also the detective when things, you know, are done. He figures out who did them. And somebody had been killed on Voyager, which is very odd because they only have like 140 people. And they can't really spare somebody to be killed and then somebody to be stuck in the brig for the rest of the series. But it was Suter. And Suter, so, you know, to go back a little bit, Voyager starts out with Janeway as captain of Voyager on a mission to capture a Maquis ship. And the Maquis were like the insurrectionists along the Cardassian border, and they didn't agree with like treaties that the Federation made with the, or the Federation made with the Cardassians. So there was one small Maquis ship, and there was Voyager going after them, and they both got grabbed by some wacky, you know, all powerful being that ended up way out 70,000 light years from their home, and you know, of course, they set up the story so that they're only going to have one ship, and they're going to have to meld their crews together. So eventually it's one crew. Chakotay was the captain of the Maquis ship.
Oh.
He was now the first officer.
Oh, I did not get that at all.
Yes. So Chakotay Torres, the engineer, was one of the leading Maquis. And well, Seska, and I would like to talk about Seska in a minute, but Seska was also on that ship with that Maquis ship that joined Voyager. And Suter was not one of the main characters. I mean, he is actually played by a major actor, Brad Dourif. I don't know if you recognize him from anything, but
I feel like I've seen him in something, but yes. I couldn't place what.
Well, he was in Lord of the Rings. He was Grima Wormtongue. If you care about Lord of the Rings, he was one of the bad guys, like Saruman's right-hand man.
Oh, okay. Maybe that's what it is.
He also, his early career, he was one of the stars of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. And if you've seen that,
I have not.
He was the very disturbed young man who Jack Nicholson's character kind of brings out of his shell.
Oh, interesting.
And yeah, so he was very young in that, but I think that made his name, you know, as a super well-respected actor and the kind of actor you don't really expect to see on Star Trek, honestly.
Sure.
You know? So anyway, Brad Dourif plays Suter, who is also one of the Maquis from the old, you know, mm-hmm, ship. Mm-hmm. And the Maquis did go around killing, you know, I mean, and causing ruckus as insurrectionists will do. But Suter is also a Betazoid, which that is the race, the alien race that Counselor Troi is part of.
Oh, okay.
So he's like a somebody who can kind of read minds, I guess. They don't really, you know, flesh that out that much. It's sort of funny that they decided to make him a Betazoid, but yeah. So yes, as you say, that I forgot that the episode opens with Suter and Tuvok talking about orchids. And yeah, when Suter's discovered to be the murderer, you know, and they don't have murderers, right? In Star Trek, like
right,
at least not on their own crews. And so Tuvok works with him. He does a mind meld with him. And that episode is actually called Meld. And he manages, I forget, like, I haven't watched it. We haven't covered it on this podcast, but I forget the exact drama and storyline of that episode. But so they brought back Suter, which was interesting, to, you know, that he's still there, because normally you see the guy get in trouble and you never see him again.
Very true.
So he's back, and boy, is he back. But yeah, in this scene, he's been working in, you know, his, you know, quarantine or whatever you call it, in the brig, or confined to quarters, I think he is, with orchids and breeding orchids. And he creates a new one, and he wants to call it the Tuvok orchid, which is quite touching, I think. So anyway, yeah. And so Tuvok's a Vulcan. He's just straight ahead Vulcan.
Oh, and and you can, like, he had definitely watched a lot of Leonard Nimoy performances, because yeah. I feel like he is channeling Nimoy, which, I mean, if I were in his shoes, I would do the exact same thing. It's not a, you know, doppelganger, but it's a very clear cribbing of how Nimoy presented Vulcans, which I think is perfectly reasonable.
Yeah, except Tuvok is full on Vulcan, and Nimoy was only
That's
half
true.
Vulcan,
That's true. That's an excellent point.
But and also, I mean, you may not remember it, but that actor Tim Russ was in TNG on one episode. There was, like, again, a bunch of rabble rousers who were trying to steal a ship that, the Enterprise, which they had all gone ashore or whatever for leave, but Picard goes back to get his saddle. And then he's on the ship, and he foils the bad guys. Anyway, Tim Russ was one of the bad guys.
Oh, and I'm looking at Wikipedia right now. Have you seen the movie Spaceballs?
No, I haven't.
Oh,
actually.
It's so good.
No, I must have seen it. Wait, I take that back. I'm sure I saw it, but I'm sure I saw it, like, when I was much younger.
That's fair. So this is Mel Brooks, and it's a spoof on Star Wars mostly. But apparently Tim Russ made a brief appearance in the comedy movie that now I'm reading from Wikipedia. The comedy movie Spaceballs is the trooper who shouts, "We ain't found poop," while combing the desert with an afro comb. So I'm kind of spoiling the joke here for you if you've not seen it. But suffice to say, the ostensible Darth Vader character is looking for somebody. He says, "Comb the desert!" And they, of course, because it's Mel Brooks, they show these men carrying humongous combs, brushing or, you know, combing the desert with these combs, because, of course, they took it literally. And yeah, so I had no idea that was the same person. That's super funny, because I always loved that line in that movie. But anyway, so I don't want to go on for 17 hours,
I like, I think that Tim Russ does a really good job with Tuvok. it is an interesting character. And in fact, if you watch the next episode after this, season 3, episode 2, is called Flashback. You were talking about Star Trek VI, mm-hmm. The
Undiscovered Country,
the Lost Generation. Yeah, the Undiscovered Country. That is, it's an homage to the Undiscovered Country, and they set it up. It was the 30th anniversary of that movie when they made it, and they set it up so that Tuvok was one of Sulu's crewmen.
Oh, nice!
And he was on the ship that Sulu was on, like, you know, discovering like the planet or moon or whatever that got blown up at the beginning. Mm-hmm, so. Mm-hmm. So it's got a big, it's not even a TNG tie-in. It's an original series tie-in.
Oh, that's very funny.
But it's very well done. And in fact, they got some of the same actors to be on the bridge.
Oh, I'll have to check Tuvok. That out. That's very cool.
Yeah. So just, you know, that little button that says play next episode.
just go ahead. Hit that. Go ahead and mash that.
And then you'll be sucked in. And but yeah, so we're, you know, that first scene does rely on knowing quite a bit, but then
I mean, I was able to mostly piece it together, and then
yeah,
you know, immediately there's some concerns about Kazons, which I had no idea what they were, but clearly they were bad. And then apparently the first officer, who I didn't really know at the time, but this is Chakotay, his kid is taken. And then the next thing I wrote was, why doesn't he care about his kid? And, you know, obviously, right. I've since pieced it together. It was funny. He pawns the decision off on his dad by doing some sort of, like, you know, spirit walk journey into into his dreams to talk to his dad, and he kind of pawns the decision off on him. And in a very 90s moment, which is actually mostly unusual for this show from whatever, based on these two episodes that I saw, but in a very 90s moment, the dad is like, hey, if the kid has four limbs and so on, it's great, right? That's all you care about. I'm thinking, and with, you know, 2021 sensibilities, I'm like, well, what if he only had one arm? Is that really so bad? You know, but at the time nobody thought that way.
Oh yeah, there's
And but then, you know, it's understood, oh, the dad, Chakotay's DNA was taken. And this to me was an extremely Star Trek moment. This very, like, mm-hmm. if you weren't a fan, you would argue it's contrived, but as someone who enjoys this sort of thing, it's a very Star Trek moment. Like, how do you end up in a situation in reality where somehow, I mean, I guess you could reason your way through it, but realistically speaking, how do you end up in a situation where your DNA, and I also found it funny that they never, you know, talked about gametes or anything like that. It was DNA. The DNA was taken and used to impregnate, and this woman used it to impregnate herself. You know, do you, or do you not care about the kid? Do you, or do you not honor that kid as yours? And that conundrum is such a Star Trek moment and such a Star Trek thing. And I can't cite other examples off the top of my head, but I feel like that sort of thing happens mm-hmm. all the time across, you know, the Next Generation, across probably most of the original series from what I recollect and of what I've seen of it. And certainly here. And I just loved that. I at this point I was starting to get into the episode, because up until now I'm just like, dude, what is happening right now? And at this point, I'm like, okay. I'm in. Let's do this.
Yeah. I mean, I do have to point out here that one of the big critiques of Voyager is the writers hired a con man, Native American consultant, who did not give them, like, good advice on how to be authentic, and in fact, yeah, it's one of those stories, and you can kind of tell, well, you know, just throughout the series, like, there's these, like, a lot of Native American things that just seem like super stereotypical generic, and so he's not, it's never mentioned what tribe he's from, because he's not from any one tribe. He has vision quests and talks to his dad. And, but yeah, but I do like Chakotay. I love the actor. He's super handsome. He's also,
yeah.
He's a good foil to Janeway. I mean, he thinks things over in a different way than she would, and sometimes he's the perfect, like, you know, person to put a brake on Janeway when she's in, you know, sort of extremist in an opinion or whatever. So, and literally the episode before this, the two got stranded on a desert planet, not a desert planet, but a very nice planet. They could not leave because there was some kind of illness that if they left the planet, they would die. And so they decided to just set up camp on the planet, and Voyager left without them. Of course, they came back when they found a cure. But
this is hitting too close to home, Gene. This is not the right time to be telling me this story. Is my house the planet in this analogy?
Your house is the planet. And anyway, it's a lot of, there are a lot of shippers out there of Janeway and Chakotay. And that episode is the one, you know, where you can find the most screenshots from, because they're basically camping, you know, for for weeks in this very Garden of Eden-like planet, whatever. So it is interesting because when Chakotay comes to talk to Janeway, he's like, you know, he's concerned, she's concerned. And I'm thinking, like, how long ago was it that you guys were on that planet? Because, like, you're all business now. You're very good at going back to just being colleagues. I like Janeway a lot in this episode. Like, she has to be very decisive. Yep. She has to be, like, tactical. It shows her, like, truly as a captain, you know. Sometimes you could get a little bit, I don't know, disappointed that of all the captains, Janeway is the most empathetic towards her crew, and is that because she's a woman, you know, that kind of stuff.
Sure.
And she can be very, very good with the crew, but she can also be a badass, and I felt like this was a Janeway is the badass episode.
It's funny you say that, because, you know, when they have the meeting and Chakotay, I was either here earlier that he basically says, look, you know, I'll do what the ship needs, you know, screw my kid, whatever. Mm-hmm. But I'd written down in my notes, you know, Janeway does not mess around. And I think it's pretty clear there. I want to go back actually just for a split second. The writing in this, I thought, was fine. Like, you know, there's a lot of things that just conveniently happen or inconveniently happen and then are conveniently fixed. But I did think the conversation between Chakotay and his dad was really good. And I had actually written down, you know, a couple of quotes. I think the dad, Chakotay, I believe, had said, how do you take a child into your heart who is forced upon you by a mother's deception? Which I thought not only was a great way to summarize everything, but it was a great turn of phrase. But then the dad says, you know, the child knows nothing of the deception. He is innocent. And I thought that that was really well handled. And again, a really good Star Trek moment.
Yeah, that was a good use of space ghost dad.
Very true. Now, if I may, I'd like to talk about my cameo, or not my cameo, the cameo that pleased me the most in this, which was my favorite thing from The Next Generation, which is still around, the tricorder. I freaking loved those things. It was like such a little tiny moment, but oh my gosh, I forgot that I loved tricorders. I think I had gotten like a little tricorder toy when I was a kid, and it was such a piece of garbage, but I loved it so much. It was hilarious. So
when you're talking about that, that's like the medical tricorder with its little wand.
Yes. I just thought those were so cool.
Yes, which they did not have in the original series, I don't think.
I think they did, but they looked way, way, way different, if I recall correctly. Way worse. I would agree with that.
Yeah. I agree. And boy, I mean, the older I get, you know, my list of things that I want from Star Trek, like priority-wise, used to be transporter, a replicator, but no longer my number one thing is sick bay.
Yeah, I hear that.
I want them to wave a thing over, you know, my shoulder and poof, it's all back again. So, and the doctor, what did you think of the doctor?
for the most part, I liked him. It seems I guess he's like a hologram from the computer that's conveniently limited to sickbay or thereabouts. I thought that there was some pretty good growth toward, I think it was more in the second episode, where he's, you know, conspiring with Soder to kind of try to save the ship. There was a couple of moments, there was some moment where he was trying to be really funny right around this time in the episode. I forget exactly what was going on, but there was this really cheesy, like, comedy moment that he tried to sell, and I found it way too campy. This is right before the person they captured, like, blew himself up, I guess, or something like that. You know, there was that scene with the nail, which I could have lived without. Like, I don't blame them for it, but I could have lived without it. And I mean, it, this is all, you know, obviously bringing the stakes higher and higher and higher. It's funny because I think at one point Chakotay earlier had said, in so many words, I think the mom's a big liar. I think this is BS, which obviously turns out to be true. But we're all ramping up toward the end of the episode. There were a couple of moments that I had real strong feelings of other media. There was when Suter was doing something. Shoot, I can't remember what was happening, but they had put him in blue, and he was like hinting that he needed to get violent. I might be lying to you. I don't remember the exact circumstance at the time, but they had him in this like very strong like blue overtone, and it just had this like strong feeling of the abyss to me. I don't know if you've seen the abyss, but not only does he have the like physical appearance of the bad guy whose name escapes me in the abyss, but this like very blue tint of it. I don't know. It just really had big abyss, the abyss feels for me, or big, the abyss energy, which is not a bad thing. I love that movie. Later on, I felt like we were channeling a little bit of actually Wrath of Khan, where there's like this SETI Alpha 5 kind of scenario where they end up stranded and marooned on this planet. Yeah. And, you know, the Voyager just kind of pieces out, under the control of the, whatchamacallit, the Kazons, I guess.
Kazon,
I've skipped over a bunch, so we can go back if we want, but this is, end of the first episode, the end of the season. Yeah. And I got to imagine if I was, you know, living and breathing Voyager at this point, I would have been losing my mind that that's how this season had ended.
Yes.
And this,
I was thinking about that too.
And this made me remember very much, I don't remember what season it was, but the season of The Next Generation where, Picard is captured by the Borg and like the end of the season, you see
best
him
of both worlds.
I think that's right. And you see him, dressed up as a Borg. Well, not dressed up. He is a member of the Borg. And then like the season ends. And I remember like as a kid, I was more patient waiting for Hanukkah and Christmas than I was waiting for the next episode of the new season to figure out what happens with Picard. And this had, a pretty similar feeling to it. Like I can imagine how devastating this would be as a fan.
Yeah. I mean, I never watched this when it was being aired. I have only watched it, where I could watch them all whenever I wanted to. So I didn't have to suffer that pain of the two part with the cliffhanger. And that's a pretty dramatic ending of that first half because, I mean, there's a lot of details going into it, like a lot of technical details, the way that the Kazon, trick the Voyager crew. Even though they're suspicious, they still are like, well, it seems like, we can't really put our finger on it. And I'm like, let's just put that guy out of the airlock, like, now. But, that's not what they do. And Seska, so Seska was part of the Maquis crew.
Yes, yes, yes.
She was in a little thing with Chakotay, like before, like the show starts, like they sort of refer to how she used to, hook up with him. But when Seska first appears, she's a Bajoran. So a Bajoran, I don't know if you remember.
No, the name rings TNG. A bell, but no.
So Cardassia was like, the big evil space Nazis, and Bajor was kind of like you know, Luxembourg or something, like a little planet that they took over and, you know, colonized. And Bajor is kind of the focus of the next of Deep Space Nine, because that's where Deep Space Nine is located. It's right near Bajor. But from TNG, they had Bajorans in a few times because they had Cardassians in a few times as well, sort of hinting at this, like, what was going on, you know, in a place where we would learn all about in Deep Space Nine eventually. But if you remember, there was an episode called Ensign Ro, and she was she came on the crew for several episodes. They have these little ridges, like, kind of on their nose between their eyebrows, and they wear earrings, like these big earrings. Anyway, it was a really good little arc. They were supposed to have her on for longer, or maybe in Deep Space Nine. I can't remember the actress's name, but she was pretty well known back then. And she was kind of this badass Bajoran. So Seska comes onto Voyager. I mean, she's been part of Chakotay's crew, and she's like a Bajoran. And she's best friends with B'Elanna Torres, who is half Klingon, half human, and who becomes the engineer. And she's kind of catty, and she's always, like, kind of sniping. I mean, there's always this, like, anti-Federation feeling among the former Maquis, even though they don't really play it up at all in a way they could have. And eventually, I don't know how she hooks up with the Kazon. The Kazon are, like, their enemies through all of season two. And they have, like, all these different, you know, sects, as they call them. So they're supposed to be like gangs, okay?
Gotcha.
Supposed to be like and I don't know about the hair. I really don't understand the hair. The Kazon hair is hard to understand. But the at some point, Seska is, well, she was there to, like, you know, to infiltrate a Maquis ship, and now she's on a Federation ship, and it doesn't really make that much sense anymore, like, for her as a Cardassian to overthrow the Federation ship, since it's the only ship, you know, that they have. And but I guess eventually she gets power hungry and annoyed with Janeway. You know, Janeway's very cautious. Janeway always does the right thing. And therefore, Janeway gets them stuck out in the Delta Quadrant because she won't do the expedient thing and, you know, blow off some race of people, because it's like, I just have to get my people home and I don't care what I do. But Seska is very Machiavellian. And then when she disappears from Voyager, and then she turns up on a Kazon ship, like, at some point, and she's clearly Cardassian, and it's like, and Chakotay is now like, what the hell?
Right.
Not only because the whole reason Janeway was following him, or one of the reasons, is Tuvok was already infiltrating Chakotay's ship.
Oh my.
Tuvok was like Janeway's right-hand man all along. And Chakotay finds out, like, two of the major characters on his ship were, you know, were traitors or infiltrators or whatever. So kind of feel sorry for the guy. But yeah, Seska. So to make a long story short, Seska is not trustworthy in the slightest. And the fact that, you know, they fell for all this series of rigmarole from the Kazon was kind of, you know, I mean, they set it up. They have to set things up at some point. And the story, like Star Trek in general, if you're really going to critique it from a very, very logical point of view, you're not going to enjoy it.
That's understandable. I don't know. I thought Seska was an interesting character. Had very big Saffron from Firefly energy. I don't know if you remember, if you've seen Firefly, Saffron, but she was played by Christina Hendricks and
was
a con artist and always seemed to, you never really knew where her allegiance lied. And honestly, I'm not sure she ever really knew where her allegiance lied. Yeah. But what was interesting to me about Seska was I noticed, I forget her, the ostensible captain of the Voyager, once it had been captured, whatever his name was, but or I guess her, like, you know,
her boyfriend.
Yeah, exactly.
The Maj, like, he was like the number one Kazon dude, Maj Kulla. There was a bunch of Majs, but his Kazon sect was the most powerful.
There you go. Okay. So he seemed to think he was the captain, but so often it was clear. I don't know. I can only speak for my marriage, but in so many ways, it's my marriage where, you know, you may think that I'm the boss, but oh no, I am not the boss. And probably nobody thinks that anyway, to be honest. But anyway, the point is she is clearly the smarter of the two, also feels like my marriage. And she's the one like instructing him, you know, oh, did you consider this? What about this? What about this? Do that. Yes. And I don't mean that the way I said that, it sounded naggy. And that was not the case at all. It's just, it's clear she's the brains of the operation, even if the dude doesn't realize, recognize, or think that's the case, which I thought was quite funny. And the other thing I wanted to briefly mention from this episode is I thought Kate Mulgrew's performance was extremely subtle, but the character in her performance was very well done. I really liked that when she got like the pot shot from... I forget who it was, but she gets like punched right when I think it was right when they arrived at
by
the
collar.
Yeah. And she just stood. And she just stands right back up. And you know, your average stereotypical, you know, woman in a movie or a television show would sit there and moan and complain about how she just got punched. Whereas Janeway just stood back up and it was like, what of it? You know, like, again, she does not mess around. And I thought that was really, really well done. And then at the very end, the very, very, very end of the episode, you see, or at least I felt like I saw just a little bit of like a quiver on Janeway's face as she's realizing, you know, what her situation is. And it was so subtle, and I loved it because it wasn't the wailing and the that you would expect from a stereotypical woman, you know, character in a movie or television show. It wasn't masculine either. It was just that it was subtle, which I really, really enjoyed and I thought was well done.
Yeah. Yeah. And like she definitely does like give you the impression that she is like, she takes being captain like super seriously, and she knows like she has, no matter how she's feeling, she needs to buck up, but she doesn't portray it as if, oh yeah, no problem, buck up and it's fine. Like, you know, she's not she is feeling challenged and maybe a little scared, but as the rest of them. So, so one of the things with the Voyager going down to that planet is that's the second time it was landed. They did land it on a planet early on in the season, but I think the Enterprise never had feet.
No, and that struck me as extremely odd, actually. I think the only time the Enterprise ever landed was when it crashed. So I did find that very odd. But, you know, if you need it as a way to move the plot along, that's fine. Then we get to the second episode, and I don't know. This one didn't ring as strong to me as the first, and I'm curious to hear what you think about it. But it felt like there was a lot of, like, I don't know, maybe not MacGuffins, but it was like, oh, the seismic activity is ramping up now because we need it for a plot device. And oh, here's the people that are mean when we need them to be, but helpful when we need them to be. You know, so much of it I felt like was kind of ham-fisted. Like, it's not that I actively disliked it or anything, but I was kind of like, a lot of it I didn't, particularly the stuff on the planet didn't really capture me like I would have hoped it would have.
I agree. Like, I think I mentioned to you when I was trying to win you over, I did like at least say like there is a lot of hokey Star Trek. This is what I was referring to, that, you know, when they come into contact with a new species on a planet, you know, that they've just landed on, they're not as cocky as Kirk is.
Oh, I mean, but that's a pretty high bar.
Yeah, but they still, like, watching it this time was the first time I realized, like, they refer to the people on the planet as aliens, and I'm like, that doesn't fit the definition of alien if you go to their planet.
That's a good point.
You know, and I mean, the whole, like, you know, caveman, you know, caveman thumping chests and caveman swapping women crap. That was annoying, and I didn't like that. However, I did like the big lizard and people getting eaten by it. So,
yeah, beyond here be dragons. There were a couple of pretty good lines. I did like a lot of what was going on the ship and the shuttle with Tom. I think for the most part,
Tom.
Apparently that is the strongest, most powerful shuttle I've ever seen in my life. But I can put that aside. but nevertheless, I thought that the whole Tom plot and the Doc and Suter, I really enjoyed all of that. I loved. Yeah. The line, "I'm a doctor, not a counterinsurgent," from the doctor, which, you know, big throwback to the original series. I thought that was great.
I figured you would catch that.
Yeah. I also liked, it's probably at least mildly racist, but I thought I did get a giggle out of it. I'm the only Indian in the universe that can't start a fire. I thought it was funny. I probably shouldn't have, but, you know, putting on my 1990s sensibilities, I enjoyed it. But I felt like, you know, I took a lot of notes on the first episode and here I kind of just let it wash over me for the most part. Things that move the plot forward, bad things that would move the plot forward happened. And then a bunch of good things that move the plot forward happened. And that was the majority of it, in my opinion. I did love that there was a nebula that one of the ships had to hide behind, because of course there was a nebula. There's always a nebula in Star Trek. You know, again, big Star Trek 2 energy. Suter going and gunning down like the entire engineering bay was unexpected for me. Have you seen, this is a deeper cut, so I would not fault you at all if you've not seen it, but have you seen the movie The Rundown, which is The Rock and Sean William Scott? It was one of the first movies, I think, that The Rock was in, and possibly the first that he had starred in. I love this movie. It is a very dumb, like, don't turn your brain on. If you're thinking at all, you're thinking too much kind of movie. But I don't want to give too much away, but... and I probably
I want to see it because I do love The Rock.
Who doesn't? Come on. But
P.S. like The Rock appears in Voyager.
Does he?
If you want to come back on the show?
Oh,
again,
my word. Oh, that's
maybe
hilarious.
Maybe I can put your name by that.
Yeah, definitely.
He's a wrestler of no kidding.
Of course. But Soder, like, coming over his aversion to hurting people and killing people, that is a big time secondary plot point in The Rundown. And I don't want to give you any more than that, but, but it was big Rundown energy. I should say, strictly speaking, because Rundown, I think, came out after this, that Rundown has big Voyager energy, but nevertheless, I did, even though it was a little bit campy and I wouldn't say it was extremely well executed, by and large, I liked that whole premise of this, like, murderous monster had to try to figure out a way to better himself. And then in order to save the ship, had to throw all that away and turn into a murderous monster again. I did think that was pretty funny. I didn't realize that he had died at the end of the episode. I had assumed he was just really, really hurt and that was going to be the end of it, which would have kind of annoyed me because everyone else got zapped once and was, you know, dead. Yeah. But I would assume that he would have gotten zapped once and then he was just really hurt. And it turns out, no, he actually saved the ship and then died, which, like you had said earlier in our episode, you know, the stakes are really high when you don't have anyone else. Well, I mean, they're always high. You don't ever want somebody to die, but when you can't bring anyone else in to replace them, you know, it's surprising that they would have killed off a character and that they would have allowed that the plot to go that way. And so I appreciate them kind of upping the ante in that regard.
Well, yeah, I mean, they definitely had, like, throughout the series, like, crew members you never heard of before would appear.
Sure. Like the guy in front of the cave.
Well, that guy had been in several episodes.
Oh, is that right? The guy collected all the bones?
I was, like, surprised that he was eaten. P.S., like, one of the best Voyager episodes ever is, like, based on another alien race finding his bones, the guy... I forget his name, who got eaten.
Is that right?
And figuring out there's a DNA connection between their race and the human race.
Huh. That's wild.
Super well done. Yeah. And yeah, you don't expect that to to reappear as like a plot point, but it was. But anyway, yeah, I think, you know, the thing is like that people will show up. Sometimes they die. Sometimes they go off, you know, on their own or with other people or whatever. And sometimes they just never show up in the story again. Like, and so it is a little random. And, you know, if you ever sat down and counted, like, you know, how many different like people and extras that you see, like, I'm not sure if it like reaches the crew complement of 140, but they didn't lose. I don't know. Yeah, somebody knows, like that factoid. I don't know, like exactly how many Voyager crew were killed over their 7-year trip.
I didn't expect Seska to have died either, which I guess, you know, I don't really shed any tears about that, but I was surprised by it nonetheless.
Guess what she comes back to, but not as a hologram, and it's awesome. So she's programmed chaos for Voyager into the future.
So she's the Q character of Voyager.
No, Q himself actually shows up.
In Voyager, fair enough. Okay,
several times actually, and apparently John Delancey and Kate Mulgrew are very good friends.
So that's awesome. Like,
it's pretty fun to watch them together, and then later on they do a thing about Q's son, who is played by John Delancey's son. So there's a lot of little fun chestnuts and Easter egg type things in Voyager. But yeah, with Suter dying, I mean, it was Brad Dorff. He was never going to be a regular on Voyager.
Right.
So, I mean, it is. It's hard for. I know, you know, he is not so famous anymore as he was, but he, you know, among actors, he's considered, you know, one of the great actors. You know, it's kind of like, yeah, will Denzel Washington be on Voyager for 7 seasons? No, he's and Seska. I really like Seska. I like her because she's kind of devious, and she. I was sorry that she died as well, but I liked her best as like this sneaky traitor Bajoran, not a Bajoran, because she was compared to the rest of the crew. She actually was like kind of snarky.
Right.
And Star Trek can be pretty earnest in its, you know, the characters tend not to have a lot of that energy that I personally like. I mean, I don't know. So let me see if there's anything I want to ask you, whether you liked it or not. But
do we know what the resolution is with the Doctor? Did he come back at the end?
Yeah, he comes back.
Okay.
Oh, he is the Doctor is like one of the all time favorite characters of Star Trek, and not just Voyager. So, but people really, really like that guy, and he's only in season 2 now, and he can't leave the sick bay. But in they do actually manage to like get a hold of some 29th century technology, because of course time travel will eventually come into it, and that he gets a mobile emitter, holographic emitter, and so he can go places. But somebody could steal his mobile emitter. That looks good for at least one or two episodes. Borg could Borg nanites could merge with his holo emitter. And then that's another, you know. And, of course, so you're not getting any of the Borg, what you've watched now. Like, the average person who thinks of Voyager thinks of 7 of 9.
Yeah, I was aware that 7 of 9 was a character, and I had assumed that she was for the entire run of Voyager. And when I realized she wasn't in these episodes, I went looking, and I was, oh, that wasn't until, you know, toward the end of this series.
Yeah, end of season 3, cliffhanger, Borg cliffhanger again. But she comes on. I mean, it apparently, you know, those Raider dudes thought like, well, what if we just brought somebody in a cat suit who was really hot, and
that'll solve everything.
That will solve it. And apparently, they were going to get rid of Harry Kim. the Korean so-called Korean crew member, although he is actually Chinese, but you know, it's kind of like the Native American thing. It's like, we got, you know, they really didn't pay attention to those details, but at the same time, he was named like in People magazines, like 50 most beautiful people. And they felt like he was like kind of, I don't know, hot, like star, you know, bringing more women to watch. I don't know. I mean, so instead of getting rid of Harry Kim, they got rid of Kes, the little blonde pixie girl, who was Neelix's girlfriend. Who got captured. And I liked Kes, and she has actually a very interesting kind of story and whatever, but yeah, they unloaded Kes and they brought in Seven of Nine, who is one of the best characters ever. So I can't complain. It took me a while. Like the first time I watched it, I couldn't get past the whole, like, are you kidding me? Like, I used to hate Troy's costumes and on TNG. And then here's this like literally skin tight suit. But as I have rewatched it many times now, Seven has grown on me, and I have appreciated how good a job the actress Jeri Ryan did with what she was given with this like costuming, because she's really cool, smart, like very fun character to watch. And interestingly enough, like Seven and the Doctor become like a interesting pair of friends. Like the Doctor, of course, he wants to help her integrate into human society like he's learned to do. She says things like, fun will now commence, or whatever. It's very funny. Like if you had a Borg for multiple seasons on your crew, that's how she talks, you know? And so I think you have like, there's more in Voyager you could enjoy, Casey. At some point, you know, when you sit down and are looking for something to watch, just keep going. Or look at my, I did do a Voyager episode guide. Every episode of Voyager rated by me, according to whether you should bother watching or not.
Well, there's quite a few seasons, aren't there? There's like seven or eight seasons, something like that. Yeah, okay.
Seven seasons, 170-something episodes. It's crazy. And there are many Voyager episodes that are just in the league of the best of Star Trek. And I think that, you know, obviously I think Voyager has been overlooked or not taken seriously enough, but I recognize there's a lot of dumb episodes too, but I'd be willing to go up against any other series and say, oh, dumb episodes. Let's talk about dumb episodes.
Oh, yeah. I feel like Next Generation, again, I haven't watched it in 20, 30 years or whatever it's been, but Next Generation, I feel like, had plenty of either phoned in or straight up stupid episodes. Now, there are great. There's several that I think were truly excellent, but it had more than its fair share of straight shovelware. So, you know, that I would say no Star Trek series is immune to that.
Nah, but I really appreciate you taking the time to watch some Star Trek with me, because it's like we watched a show together, even though we don't get to see each other in pandemic.
I know, yeah. I know that part makes me sad, but I'm glad we found a reason and an excuse to talk to each other for a while, and a reason to get me to watch some more Star Trek. It's been a long time, and I'm glad I did.
Well, if you watch some more Voyager and you want to come back on the podcast, just you let me know.
Anytime. If you feel like there's an episode you need you need some Casey energy, I am here. I am at your service. You just let me know. I'm here for you.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, thanks, Casey. I really appreciate it. And thank you, listeners, for being here. You can find Voyager Revisited online at voyagercast.com. And you can also follow us on Twitter at @Voyager_cast. And if you like the podcast, you might want to check out all the other great shows at theincomparable.com and consider becoming a member, which gets you access to bonus episodes, bootlegs, our special members-only Slack, where you can find me chatting about all things Star Trek with other podcasters and fans. I'll be back in a couple of weeks with another guest to discuss Star Trek Voyager. Until then, time's up. We didn't even mention my favorite line, though, which is like, a hologram and a sociopath may not be much to face the Kazon, but that's all we've got.